Greetings, human beings, and welcome to the third episode of Apartment 303, a podcast for community fans. My name is Dave, and alongside our co-hosts, Adam and Scott, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to this episode, as well as for all the support and enthusiasm you provided throughout our first two. If you're joining us now for the first time, welcome. Apartment 303 is a new podcast where we discuss and debate all things community, attempting to delve into each and every layer of the show, what makes it work, and why we love it. So, without further ado, let me reintroduce Scott and Adam. How's it going, guys? What have you been up to since the last show?
Going pretty well here. This is Adam. I have been recommitting to my exercise routine. Last time I mentioned it was yoga as a restorative practice. This time I'm getting on my stationary bike and trying to burn some calories, which I did to the tune of about 20 hours for a playthrough of Chrono Trigger. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Nice. Nice. It's impressive that you're able to actually burn calories from playing video games with a, you know, stationary bike. I've personally also been trying to get back into an exercise routine after battling a running injury. This last week I've celebrated my third year of living in the Pacific Northwest after moving up from California. So that was kind of an exciting milestone, and this last year has not been the best year I've lived here, but it's still a really good one.
So before this episode ends, we are going to finally get into a discussion and some differing opinions regarding the pilot episode. However, before we do, I wanted to really explore a subject that we've touched on and kind of danced around throughout our discussions in the first two episodes, and that is the topic of character identification, both how we view Dan Harmon's personality manifested in the characters, as well as how we ourselves identify with them. Scott, do you want to kick things off?
Sure. I would like to initially open up with, there is an emphasis on identification because we are looking at Dan Harmon and his representation, his personality representation of each of the characters and how the writing comes through. From what I know of Dan Harmon and his work and watching a documentary on the Harmontown podcast, a lot is revealed. And I think the pilot does a great job of breaking down Dan Harmon and his character representation. The thing I'd like to take a look at is Jeff. And I personally believe that Jeff is how Dan represents himself publicly to a lot of his friends and fans. And I think this comes across on the show because that's how he actually visualized himself and wrote himself into the show. It was through Jeff. And then now to take things down a next level is looking at Abed. And Abed represents a lot of how Dan writes and looking at things in his meta lens and his how really like his worldview comes across is through Abed. Troy is the type of person he aspires to be. Shirley is a woman he respects and ultimately connects with. I think she represents a lot what he connected with when he did go back to community college. Pierce represents, and really Chevy Chase represents, the comedy that he grew up with. And then Annie and Britta are actually the women that, or type of women he idealizes being with. That's probably my hottest take on that. Adam, I'm not going to go into my personal one yet. I really want to hear your feedback and initial thoughts on how I broke that down.
So first of all, terrific accidental double entendre with hot take and attaching that to Annie and Britta. I just have to give credit where credit is due, because I think this is such a really good idea and concept for us to be pushing out. And, you know, this was certainly something that you felt passionately about, and I think it's a really great exercise here. And it would be hard for me to disagree with anything you've said because it's really well thought out and very apparent. So I can add to maybe a little bit. And Dan Harmon has said over the years that he had gone back to community college and was taking a biology class and didn't have much else going on in his life and was like acing the class. Mm-hmm. And he ended up forming this ragtag group that was very similar to what we see in the show because they were all younger and they saw, hey, this guy's getting an A in this class. Let's siphon off, you know, his biology knowledge and study habits and things. So I think you really hit the nail on the head with that. It was going as far as saying that Jeff represents Dan Harmon very, very clear that that is the case. I think with Chevy / Pierce, it does represent the comedy that Dan grew up with, but also kind of a cautionary tale of where he doesn't necessarily want to head himself. You know,
oh, from and, his kind of, you know, his dealing with alcohol, his struggle really with alcohol, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's totally fair to say. And, you know, it's interesting through that lens. If we look at the Dia de los Muertos first Halloween mm-hmm. episode, there's that scene where Pierce is tripping and like he's afraid he's going to die and like all of that. And I think that kind of does really play into Dan Harmon. Like this is where he doesn't want to go, a path he doesn't want to take for himself, but maybe fears that at his worst, that could be the route that he goes.
Yeah.
So I think you're spot on with Chevy and with Jeff and also with Abed. Yeah. I had previously talked to one of my other friends about how it would be this crazy fan theory if Abed went to, you know, after the season 6 concludes, Abed goes off and he starts writing this TV show and the show he writes is Rick and Morty and yeah. like how self-referential that would be and how meta that is and how great that would fit Abed. But to your point is very clearly based on Dan Harmon's writing style. And I think that it would, there's even an episode in Rick and Morty, the episode with Unity, they do a bit where Rick says something along the lines of, oh, do you even know what it's like to have this group of people just completely agree with everything you say? And it shows a Rick and Morty version, you know, illustration of the cast of Community in the study room on the TV there. So I think that's, you know, another really compelling point. Not
I did not expect that
Morty.
Deep of a dive of Rick and Morty coming from you.
You know, I'm like Abed said, I'm trying to diversify my pop culture references. So, yeah. And I would say, too, that you were spot on with those other portrayals as well. And I know that one of the writers from the Community show, I can't think of the word here, but Dan Harmon had some specific set of feelings about her, and that kind of came out in the form of Annie. And mm-hmm. I've seen a couple people have said, you know, during the Me Too era that Dan Harmon issued one of the best apologies to this particular writer. And, you know, mm-hmm. you see that with the episode where Buddy is in the study or he tries to join the study group and Jeff says, hey, Annie's really young, we try not to sexualize her. So yeah. that's like a really poignant way where what's going on in Dan's life makes it to the show. And there's tons of examples of that, but that's just kind of I think really reiterates your point.
I'm surprised that you didn't have more issue with the how I broke down Jeff and Abed, just because I know Dan has publicly said that he sees himself more as an Abed, mm-hmm. but I still see more Jeff personally, but.
Yeah, we could go back and forth on that. I definitely think that, you know, there's old memes. It's like, oh, how my parents see me, how I see me, how my friends yep. see me. I think we could completely do that with Dan Harmon in this, but I think realistically, he is mostly Abed, but in order to get this show on television, he needed some attractive leading man, and that only goes so far. No offense to Dan. Dan's got his own, desirable qualities, but he doesn't quite look like
like Joel McHale.
I can't even separate him or Joel McHale. Like, they, you know, I can't tell them apart.
Fair enough.
So for you, how do you break down these characters and how you see yourself in them?
In terms of just like breaking down percentage wise, I am very confident that I'm predominantly Britta, so somewhere in the 40-50% range. And I would say that even though they're totally opposite characters, probably the next highest for me is Annie, you know, just in terms of that kind of type A, super wound tight, mm-hmm. kind of perfectionist. I have a lot of those type of tendencies in myself. So those are the two primary examples or percentages for me. And beyond that, Abed is probably next in the 10-15% range. And I'm losing track of my numbers and my math here. I should have had a spreadsheet ready.
Right.
And I think I want to be more like Troy, because Troy's the best character in the show.
If we had a Venn diagram, that's where our percentage breakdowns would line up, and the same reasoning too.
Oh yeah. He's so enjoyable. He's funny. Without him, the show doesn't work quite as well, quite the same way. And then I am basically 0% Jeff, basically 0% Shirley, and, you know, any other minor characters. I have very little resemblance to them. And this, of course, you know, the percentage thing is an homage to how Abed broke down when he was playing Jeff, you know, as X percentage Dick Van Dyke and Zach Braff, mm-hmm. and Hilary Swank. So, yeah, what about you, Scott? Where do you sort of fit in or align with the percentage, or however you want to break it down, in terms of your community self?
My community self. I think it's actually a great breakdown of how our friendship dynamic goes, because it's not that I see myself as Joel McHale, but I see a lot of the personality and life approaches come across between myself and Jeff.
I mean, relative to me, you definitely are Joel McHale.
I'm going to run away
You're
with
welcome.
That compliment.
Just
yeah,
just
thank
take
you.
A compliment.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And then next, I think it's really close between Troy and Abed. It's hard not to be an engineer and have some of the Abed tendencies come across,
right,
with him being, you know, Abed and Annie have the same type of meticulousness and and drive towards their passion. So you can't really say you have one without the other. So Annie's like, it's a very low percentage, but she's in there. But that drive and tenacity she has,
Good point. I hadn't made that connection between Abed and Annie before. I think that's a great point.
And again, I'm not sure what this says about me. I feel like I should mention the personality or the trait that I really like about Shirley is her commitment to her family and just having that foundational thing to go home to is something I personally aspire to now. I'm in my 30s, and it's something I'm looking at through a really different lens than when I first started watching the show in my early 20s. Now I'm looking at Shirley and be like, that is something I want.
So what you're saying is that's nice.
That's nice. It really is. That's nice.
And you'd mentioned, I think, in the last podcast that Troy's got the heart of the hero, which is certainly true. And, you know, they explicitly say that in one of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But you could make the case that in terms of just like the heart of the group and the kindness of the group really has to run through Shirley, because for all of the instances where she's, you know, short with somebody, she really is the most caring in the entire group, cares the most about everybody else, as well as her family, like you're saying. And I think that was portrayed just excellently by Yvette Nicole Brown, because I think she's really authentically that type of person.
So before we get into our pilot segment, I want to take just a few quick seconds to play something for you guys back from our first episode.
if we're being honest, like the first episode really isn't that funny. But it's good enough to, I think it's still a better pilot than most.
You know, you've insulted that episode in a way I won't stand for.
Adam, can I get your response here first?
You know, for my opening remarks, I have a prepared statement.
Now, oh, God.
As you all will recall, in the first episode of Apartment 303, a place designed to be a safe haven and forum to discuss all things community, mind you, my co-host attempted to besmirch the good name of this beloved television program. He made the audacious, unfounded claim that the pilot episode was, and I quote, "If we're being honest, the first episode really isn't that funny." Now, I sincerely apologize for spouting such blasphemous language, but Scott's words, not mine, and I am only repeating them.
I thought this was a safe space. I guess I was wrong.
So, before I go full Jeremy Soulpatch Simmons, Scott is partially right. The pilot is not one of the top 10 funniest episodes of Community. However, that is not to say that it's not funny at all. I would like to view this episode kind of like it's a leadoff hitter on a baseball team. It's setting up the table for other things to come later. And I specifically came across, there's another video out there on YouTube. I had seen a guy named Justin Cook from the Cook Films had done an episode on what he considered the best episode of Community and points out that the Community is at its best when it combines comedy and emotion, and I think he's very right about that. Mm-hmm. In order to get that point, though, you have to sort of plant the seeds of emotional investment, and that's really what the first few episodes of Community do well, particularly the pilot. And I have taken a look and gone over, and I'll say that the pilot episode is the one I've watched the most times, and I went through and I realized that for pretty much all of the characters, there is one specific joke, or in some cases two or three, that are not only funny, again, just to pass off as a sitcom, but they also really clearly set the tone for this is what this character is going to be like. So it's a really nice way to sum up, I guess, the Greendale 7 for the most part in one joke, and they all happen to be in the pilot. So I'd like to get into that later, but Scott, I do want to give you a chance to rebut yourself, to certainly revise your statement if you feel it's necessary to take back that claim that the pilot's not funny.
I definitely need to revise that statement because I do remember immensely enjoying the pilot. But as a viewer now, I don't particularly enjoy rewatching it. Just because the things they set up and the jokes that they make, they are continued to be used all the time. And I think because, you know, it's the first episode, things are getting set up. It's the jokes haven't had the time to settle or marinate, really. And they're more kind of like just force fed, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Do you have any specific examples? I'm willing to entertain your point if you can back it up.
The quirkiness of Abed's line.
Yes.
That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever said to me. Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. He's very chatty and very quirky. Mm-hmm. And I think that's completely in a way that he ends up not being. And that's the single best criticism you could have of the pilot episode is to say that you didn't like the way Abed was portrayed. And if I can counter with what I think is a truly spectacular Abed joke from the pilot is when the study group gets together and not the whole group, but this is just when Abed comes in and Jeff asks everyone for their contact information, which at the time is just Britta and himself. And then he quickly tries to cover that up and get Abed's phone number on there so that he can, you know, discreetly text, say, "You need to pee, I need to talk to you." And Abed opens up the phone. He's like, "Oh, hey, this is the first text I've ever gotten. Let me read this."
Yes.
And that's really funny. But the best part about it is when Jeff then gets a text from Duncan
Abed's like total misunderstanding of interpersonal communication comes out in a way that I feel is authentic to that character when Jeff reads it to himself, like a quote unquote regular person would do.
A normal says, human being, if you will.
Exactly, exactly. Abed asks, he says, "Does it say you need to pee?" And that is so funny because
I missed that.
Oh, it's so good. Abed's not even on screen when it happens. It's showing the text that Duncan reads because the joke is that Duncan's trying to force like the number 8 and other abbreviations into his text.
Yeah.
But Abed says, "Does it say you need to pee?" And that just totally sets him up as this character who can't totally understand interpersonal interaction. Mm-hmm. And he does it in a really funny way, a really authentic way, and a great way, I think, that sets it up, the character of Abed, for the entire rest of the show. But
yeah,
to your original point, I agree. Abed is not the Abed we come to know and love in the pilot episode.
The other thing I'd like to note is for this episode of the podcast, I still enjoyed going through the episode, looking for troves of things that I know I can look at now. We should mention that the Russo brothers did direct this episode, and it's been put out that the famously successful Avenger films, in the most recent one, they ask who puts mayo on a hot dog. And in this episode, you see Pierce, Chevy Chase's character, putting mayo on a hot dog.
You just wrinkled my brain.
I'm so excited because I had just assumed you knew that, had known about this callback or coincidence. Dude, how, if that was intentional, how amazing is that?
It's pretty great, and that is exactly the type of writing, type of humor that lends itself so well to the show, because so many times it is a specific, deliberate callback, mm-hmm. and other times it's happenstance, but you believe that they did it on purpose because they've been so brilliant in the writing and direction before. So, yeah, I'm so glad that you shared that. I didn't know that happened in the Avengers movie. Obviously, yep. I remember when Pierce does it. I just watched the pilot.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great.
So, yeah, I did enjoy this rewatch, doing the homework, I guess, for the episode and finding things like that. Was there any big reveal for you that on this last rewatch that stood out to you, or anything that you caught that you're like, I didn't see that before?
Actually, there was, and I feel like that's another reason why Community, you can get so much out of rewatching these episodes more than any other sitcom, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So one quick caveat on the Netflix cut of the pilot. They take some scenes and jokes out. There are no references to Britta looking like Elizabeth Shue. And I think that was just kind of like a timing thing that they got rid of those. But there was also, they cut out the scene where the cashier at the cafeteria asks if Jeff was conditioned to pay for his damn taco, Seinfeld. That's gone. They took that joke out. And
why?
I don't know. I think it must have been just like a timing thing. And because now it's 26 minutes on Netflix, and I think it was like 29. So they evidently had to cut down some time. Anyway, even though the cafeteria cashier is not, she doesn't have a speaking part in the Netflix edit, you mm-hmm. can see her giving Jeff the stink eye and like looking at him and trying to get him to pay for those tacos just by, you know, searing into him with her look. And it's so funny and it's so well acted. And I never noticed it until, you know, today. And like I said, that's the episode I've watched. I bet I've seen the pilot of Community 20 times, 25 times. And there's still something there for me.
Is it from just like introducing friends to the show? Or
yeah, ordinarily that is. And that's a good topic for another time. If you were going to introduce someone to the show, what episode would you have them watch?
Yeah.
I traditionally have gone with the pilot.
I was about to call you out on that. Just like, it's interesting that that be the one you pick would be the pilot.
Because
you, I don't know, when you're trying to talk someone to watching a show, you hardly ever choose the pilot. And that's something, you know, that's something to be said about this pilot. I do think it is worth being the show you show someone first or that introduce them to community.
That's a fair point, and I think you're proving my point for me again, that to say that this is a seed that needs to be planted to extract or harvest the most comedy later on down the line. I had mentioned the Cook Films video that was discussing mixology certification, and the reason that that's such a good episode, and you and I have talked about it too, and we know how wonderful it is mm-hmm. because you care about these characters first. If that had been the first episode I showed someone, it wouldn't resonate with them.
Absolutely.
So, to the initial prompt, maybe the pilot's not the funniest episode, but it is essential so that we can get that emotion plus comedy and really make that show or make the show what it is. So mm-hmm. points all taken. We can disagree a little bit on the execution or the humor of it, but I'd like to take a look and read another one or two of those jokes about a character that function. Again, just, oh, hey, this is funny, but also there's more to it when you actually read into it a little bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
So character of Pierce is obviously not everyone's favorite, but he's not written to be. Which is mm-hmm. another brilliant part of this show. And introducing him in that way, I think, is really interesting. And the joke that he makes that really sets up his character well is when they're when Jeff's storming out of the study group room for the second time, he tells Abed, "You have Asperger's." And Troy laughs because he's a juvenile and mm-hmm. does it in this really authentically Troy and Donald Glover way. And Pierce, he responds by saying, if it's so serious, why don't they call it meningitis? And that's, again, it threads that needle of Pierce being a jerk versus saying something that's actually conceptually funny. And I think it really sets up what they do later, which is when Troy creates the Twitter handle Old White Man Says. Yeah, there's like a little bit of, I don't want to say wisdom, that's a little bit too strong of a word, but like you kind of see his point just a little bit. And I think that's when Pierce is at its best, when he's still old and crusty, but there is at least a little bit of truth to what he's saying.
Yeah.
Which, of course, just public service announcement, Asperger's is a serious disorder, and certainly don't mean to belittle anyone who has that affliction. But Pierce contrasting it with meningitis is, to me, funny.
Okay. All right, point taken. That was something that was another joke I do remember. It's funny, like I actually remember the jokes that were I laughed at on the initial view of Community. And
absolutely. You know, and I'll say too, I'll just defend real quickly, the Dean in the very first scene of this show sets it up perfectly because he is describing all of these stereotypes of people who come to community college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's burnouts, it's 20-somethings, it's mid-30s divorcees, and old people trying to keep their minds active while they circle the drain of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is really funny. And then, you know, it has a shot of the members of the study group who fit that description. So you kind of get a sense early, very early, that this is a little, you know, poignant. It's a little on the nose with some of these folks. And then to have the Dean lose the middle card and say, however, I wish you luck. To me, at the first viewing, that wasn't necessarily all that funny, but it did give me some perspective about the lovable misfits that I was going to be going on a journey with.
Right.
And I would, again, use this as a way to defend introducing someone to the show by having them watch the pilot. Because there's enough there where you get important backstory, and it's still funny enough. Plus, when you watch it with me, I'm laughing the whole time because I know the jokes before they're going to happen. So some people enjoy that. Other people find it super off-putting. But
yeah. Just to transition here and kind of look at a different topic for this episode, I'd like to look at Jeff's speech.
Yeah, the first winger speech.
It's strange that him delivering it, you know, it's inauthentic because he's doing all of this just so he can get with Britta.
Right. And she can't see that for the compliment that it is.
Yep. I also have another dig at that too. But
perfect.
On the other spectrum, end of the spectrum though, like the, even though the speech itself, like him delivering it, is inauthentic, there actually is a great line about, there's a lot of great things he actually says in the Winger speech. And my favorite is, people can see the good in anyone but themselves. And if you take that statement alone, it's really, it's kind of a, it's got a lot of heart to that statement. And that's something we got out of a community, and yeah, something that keeps that keeps us coming back to the show, is like, we don't come back. We come back for the jokes. We love the jokes, but also that there's this element of heart that's inserted into certain episodes. And I feel like this Winger speech does a great job of inserting that element of the show, I guess.
I certainly agree. I hadn't considered that point before you brought it up. I think it's a very good one. And I would say that it also illustrates Jeff being able to use his lawyer powers, not necessarily for good, but deliberately including something that will resonate with people. And
yeah,
but it, the fact of the matter is, it still is a pretty compelling and emotional point when you really think about it. And to see him utilize that over the course of 6 seasons, and I'd be curious to take a look at how, right, hopefully, and to look at how his Winger speeches have either stayed the same and are totally selfish and self-serving to the later episodes, where I'd be willing to bet it's a little bit more selfish, a little more group-centered.
I love you pointed that out, because there's another element of the speech I wanted to bring up, was Steve.
Yeah.
The pencil. Steve the pencil.
Rest in peace, Steve.
Rest in peace. But, and this is another great, just another great thing of the Harmon group writing, is you see Abed repairing Steve.
He does. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to read too much into it, but it really, you know, we've had a discourse about who controls the group more, or has more of an influence on the greater direction of the group. Is it Jeff or is it Abed? And I love that it is a thing that happened in the very first episode, that I didn't even, like, when we started that discourse, I didn't even think of that. You know, I didn't think of, like, Steve the pencil getting broken, because that's something Jeff did. And now, and then you see in the background that Abed is repairing it.
Yeah. I love that. That's such a good point. It ties back, you know, with our first topic of how Dan Harmon comes through his characters. So there's, you know, the proverbial devil and angel on your shoulders. That's Jeff and Abed, you know, for Dan Harmon in a lot of ways. And for the study group as well, Abed is inherently interested in keeping the group together and keeping people happy, to a fault sometimes, but in a later episode, he asks Jeff to move back out of his dorm room because he knows it's not good for Jeff. And to get the same offer from Jeff would be highly unlikely, especially in the earlier seasons.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I picked up on the Winger speech was I don't know what else to call it, a Harmonism, there is a reference to ice cream, which is a very, it's a continuing theme throughout Community, but especially in Rick and Morty.
Y'all, please expand upon that. I know
the
Modern Warfare episode, the City College mascot is an ice cream cone. But other than that, I'm drawing a blank.
When Pierce's mom dies,
they go to get ice cream. You're right.
They go to get ice cream.
Yeah.
And then, and as far as Rick and Morty goes, they go to get ice cream in one episode, and like the car is left to keep Summer safe.
And then, I do remember that one.
And then there are others, and I just can't for the life of me remember them.
There's an after, you know, whatever the last minute or two of the episode is. There's one where Pierce is trying to get soft serve ice cream, and he can't get it to turn off.
Yep, love it, love it. I got a prompt for you.
Well, lay it on me.
Okay. What's what is Abed's doozy in the chamber?
Abed's doozy in the chamber is the scene from Breakfast Club.
Was it really, though?
Well, what do you think it is?
Well, I know it was Breakfast Club, and right. like that's what he delivers. But what I feel like Abed actually had something to personal when he referenced something in doozy in the chamber, and I thought maybe you had any kind of like prediction or
well, he certainly it. Does, as we can tell from episode 1-3, what our last podcast right. was about. That is completely about Abed and his past and the challenges and struggles he's faced. So there's no doubt he does authentically have a doozy in the chamber, and he uses the Breakfast Club one because it's safer, and he knows that he can say it and not have any emotional consequences from that, because it's not something, a memory that belongs to him, and he can still kind of get that reaction from people and participate in an extent, but to not actually have to offer up anything personal.
But he did, though, in the first like minute of the show.
He did a little bit. Yeah, you're right.
That's why I was going to say, that's why I suspect there's a little bit more to it, because he's, you know, Jeff, we start with Jeff and Abed, and you can assume from Abed's response to his question, Jeff had just asked him what the time was.
Right.
And Abed goes into the full dialogue of like his conflicts with his mom. Mm-hmm. And like, and that's why I'm like, well, if you just told Jeff this in the first minute of the show, like I'm assuming there's another doozy in the chamber that we have yet to find out about. And then, yeah. So slight character reveal. Were there any other character reveals that particularly stood out to you?
Not, I think everyone else is pretty, you know, close to the vest. Pierce, we find out, is the heir to the Hawthorne Wipes mm-hmm. fund. Annie, we don't really find all that much out about, other than she had been addicted to pills and got kicked out.
Well, Annie Adderall.
Surely, I just love that Jeff points out that jukebox, head through the jukebox thing is way too specific to be improvised.
Yeah.
And that does give you a glimpse into, to tie back into, we've mentioned a mixology certification, and that's the episode where we find out that Shirley has been an alcoholic in the past. So,
yeah,
there's definitely a lot of little teasers that go out, and eventually we're rewarded as the observer, as someone watching the show and paying close attention, like you and I do,
mm-hmm.
and it comes back full. There's a lot of little tiny full circle things in these episodes. And again, that's what makes you attached to the characters. That's where you can get that comedy plus emotion and have a really profound payoff. And again, it's why we have a show, why we're podcasting, and why we love it so much still.
So one subtle thing I caught was, and these are just things I just caught on this rewatch, that's, I consider a character reveal of Britta, is she tells Jeff that she has a problem with honesty. She has a problem with honesty, but she lies to Jeff in the very first episode.
Right.
Which I think is like kind of a subtle reveal, right? Like
you're definitely right. It certainly becomes one. If you pull at that string, you find out, and Britta's character arc is really pretty radical. And season one, Britta is a very specific way, and she's a very strong, independent character. And later episodes, that ends up being less and less the case. She's the butt of more jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's definitely something to that. There's definitely something to that.
All right. Last thing I got to say, I sleep late Spanish. One more hour. Do not scratch my car.
Yeah. So that was another. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was the joke that I had picked for Jeff. And specifically when he tells Britta that his name is Jeff, or Jefe, which in Spanish means boss or chief. And it just goes to show the lengths in which Jeff will try to manipulate someone and say something to get what he wants from them, that he will mm-hmm. speak gibberish in another language to get it. And when you really think about how manipulative that is, that gives you a pretty accurate and full portrait of the Jeff Winger character. And that's the Winger guarantee.
All right. Let's leave it there for today. We would like to take this time to thank each and every one of you for tuning in and invite you to join us in our next episode, where we will be discussing music and its use in the show, as well as character and actor superpowers. Apartment 303 is now available on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. For Adam and Scott, this is Dave signing off. We will see you in episode 3.